Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio. David, it's great to be back with you. I was out last week on my way to Peru, where I was get a chance to speak to some members of the Peruvian Congress about immigration and our new president and what that means. So it's great to be here with you today. David, I hope you missed me a little bit. I'm sure you did.
Always
miss me. Always miss you. David, I want to start off today talking about the election. I'm not talking about Donald Trump. We have an election right here where David and I live. We both live in the Georgia 6th District, formerly the district belonging to Newt Gingrich. And prior to that, after that, our friend Tom Price, who is, I know, a very dear friend of David's. Did you just go to dinner with him all the time? Is it? So, David, here's my question. Have you voted yet?
No.
Neither have I. I'm thinking of voting today. One of the things I've been doing, as you know, I flirted with a run for this seat about whether I should put my name in. And for various reasons, not the least of which was the fact that Donald Trump has made us extraordinarily busy, and I didn't want to walk away from my practice at this time and all the people we can help. But was the fact that money was going to be a very expensive race. We knew that. And we thought it would be, from a Republican perspective, around a $2 million race. Well, clearly we were wrong about that. It's about a $9 million race, because that's how much money John Ossoff has raised. What's interesting about Ossoff, besides the fact he's a young kid, seems to be a pretty reasonable young man, seems to have his head on his shoulders, successful. His declaration for his personal financials are better than all but, I think, two or three of the Republicans, including people like Karen Handel, who apparently have no money whatsoever. So what are you doing with your life? You know, you're 60 years old. Are you going to retire on my money when you file Social Security? And so one of the things I've been doing, David, is I'm trying to think, who am I going to vote for? I knew when I decided not to run that people like Handel were going to run and Dan Moody were going to run and Bob Gray were going to run, along with the litany of other folks. A couple things. How would you distinguish yourself? How would you set yourself apart? How would you run a campaign, as well as how much money you would put into the race? And what's interesting about this is apparently everybody, very few people have actually put their own money in. I mean, they all got a little bit of token money in. Dan Moody's put $2 million of his own money in, as I thought he would. I mean, I knew right away he'd put $2 million of his own money in, but he's only raised like another $100,000. Karen Handel's put in like, I don't know, 30 or something like that. And she's raised like $400,000. I mean, they don't have any money. The 11 candidates. Now, Bob Gray put in $500,000 of his own money. He's raised another $400,000. So really the only Republican that's got $2 million in this race is Dan Moody. And he's not in the top three people getting votes right now.
My understanding that Gray and Handel are neck and neck.
Yeah, and Moody was third in the Republicans. Part of that, Handel is the name recognition. Everybody knows who Karen Handel is, right? But I said from the beginning, she's going to max out at 20%. She got 20% of the vote, that's all she's got. And what does she have? Like 15 right now. Gray is, I think, on the city council, or was on the city council in Johns Creek, which was one of the cities in the district. And he's like 15%. So he's got that vote that people that know him from Johns Creek. Now, we're talking about the percentage. We're not talking about Republican primary and Democratic primary. It's just one race. So Ossoff's around 40%. Now, here's what's really interesting from a vote perspective. Early vote is for this kind of election, early vote's solid, okay? Democrats are early voting Republicans, which is no surprise. Republicans tend to come out on election day. Democrats don't. That's, we learned that in the last election and many elections prior to that. So if Democrats have any hope of, if Ossoff has any hope of winning this race, he's got to get more Democrats to get out early than not. But what's interesting about this, if you break down the votes, and how do they know who are Democrats, Republicans? Well, they're registered voters, right? They're registered for each party. Although in Georgia, there is no registration. So all they can do is look at which ballot you took in the last election or the last couple of elections. Well, here's the interesting number, David. A large percentage, let's say a third of the voters, they don't know who they voted for because they didn't vote in the primaries in the last several elections. Now, that number should scare who? Republicans. That number should scare the Republicans, because if you've got people coming out to vote who have not voted in the last couple of elections, like the Donald Trump election, more than likely, they're either new voters, which means they're probably not going to vote for Donald Trump. Do you know any new voters who said, gosh, I love Donald Trump? I don't know any like that. So they're probably going to be Ossoff voters. So Ossoff, I think, is building up a pretty commanding lead. He's at 40% or more in the polls. But here's what's interesting, David. So, I'm, as you know, and I think you are, you generally vote for a GOP guy. You're generally going to vote Republican. I've kind of viewed myself as a Republican, at least until Trump won the election, who's not a Republican, by the way. I guess I think everybody's learning that now. But here's what's interesting about this. As I've decided, said, who am I going to vote for? Which of these people am I going to vote for? And so I said, okay, which one of them is running a Kasich-like campaign? Which one of them is looking at what's good for America, not attacking other people, and really telling the truth about what Donald Trump really is? And you know who that is in this whole race is, David? No one. They're all Trumpeters. Every single one of them are Trumpeters. And that just stuns me. I mean, Trump barely won this district. And since his inauguration day, his poll numbers have literally plummeted. Now, I know here in the 6th district he's above water, okay? Not by much, but he's above water. But why would you this is not a primary, because you're not attracting GOP people. You're running in basically what are two general elections. How is none of the Republicans realizing that Trump is an anchor that will bring them down? So I honestly don't know who I'm voting for, because at this point, not a single member of the GOP's nominated delegation are people I can support. And I'm sad about that, because I thought Dan Moody was going to be that guy. But Dan Moody has went full other. He's got David Perdue campaigning for him. They have gone full us against them, full Trump on this. And I got to tell you, I'm wildly disappointed. Wildly disappointed that has happened. I would have thought that somebody like Dan Moody, who I've always viewed as kind of a real person who brings people together, would do that in this election. And that's just sad. And I guess you've got to distinguish yourself from the other Republicans that are out there. But I think there's plenty of people like me and you, David, who you're not looking for crazy. I'm not looking for somebody who's going to come in and, hey, let's bomb Syria. Hey, let's start another war. Hey, let's take health care away from everybody without a solution. You know, it was funny when I was talking to campaign people about running. They said, you got to come up with three bullet points, and you're going to campaign on those. And you know what's interesting? You've been getting the mailers, right? My mailbox is full of these mailers, which I just toss right in the garbage can. You know what? Look at them from this eye. Every one of them has three bullet points on them. Every one of them has three bullet points on them. And what's remarkable? They're almost all the same for everybody. They've got term limits. They've got be going to crack down on terrorism. And Judson Hill, who appears to be an absolute moron, is we're going to stop all the bad immigrants coming into the country. Judson, really? What century do you live in? It's sad, unfortunately, to see this happening in our race. Now, I'm great at Mark. Look at my prediction for the last general election. I was wrong, as you wrote that down, right? Hillary's going to win that election. Me and everybody else were wrong. Do you have a prediction on this race? How about a prediction for you have a prediction who's going to be in the runoff, David? This is an easy one. Who's going to be in the runoff?
I think Gray.
You think Gray? Well, Ossoff's going to be in the runoff. That's a guarantee.
Ossoff. Ossoff, I don't believe a word he says, personally.
Have you met him?
No, I don't know.
Me neither. I haven't met him either. Why is he lying?
I just... I haven't heard anything good about him from outside of,
Well, that's because there's millions of dollars of negative ads running against the guy. But that's,
this is outside of ads. Folks that I know that are closer to it than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same token, I couldn't bring myself to vote for a Democrat.
I know you couldn't. I know you couldn't.
Put a gun to my head.
But he's clearly going to be in the runoff.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. So unless he wins this. There is that possibility.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
I think it's a pretty far-reaching one.
They'd have to bust thousands of Democrats to the polls on Election Day to make that happen.
From a station standpoint and a personal standpoint, I'm not a Karen Handel fan.
Yeah, I'm
She's a professional
politician.
Runner. Yeah, she's never won anything. Well, she won.
She won county commission, which, you know, like 25 years ago. So
yeah, and Secretary of State. But she blew it running for governor. The thing that people don't realize about Karen is that she really is not qualified to be running for anything, basically.
She is. She never went to college, if I'm mistaken. She actually was born in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
unlike the funny memo about NRA ran an ad against Ossoff. He was born and grew up in D.C. No, actually, he was born here and he grew up here in Georgia. But nice try. Handel was actually born and grew up in D.C.
Yeah.
However.
So, you know, it's sort of sad that we don't have, just like you said, we don't have a better representation of personalities and people running for the office.
You know, and I apologize, David. I just apologize.
I was ready to be your campaign manager.
I know you were. And with that, I'm sure we could have actually been successful in this campaign.
No, you know, it's and it's an important district, and I would hate to see it go to Ossoff. I really don't care for that young man. You know, the other thing that one of my concerns,
he's just 30 years old.
Yeah,
and really, he hadn't done a whole heck of a lot.
No,
I mean, he made some documentaries, which apparently were actually quite effective, but. You know, so were that crazy guys on the other side of the aisle that makes crazy documentaries are kind of effective.
Yeah.
I mean, I want them in Congress, and so I just don't know what to do because I can't find a Republican that actually is going to represent me.
You know, the other thing that I've found quite annoying is not only the mailbox has been full, but I must have gotten 6 calls yesterday or more. And I'm on the no-call list, but I keep, you know, it was either somebody supporting this or that or a survey. And my wife and I both have gotten, I think we have a race going on who can punch the click off button fastest.
Well, I don't answer my home phone, actually, ever. I don't know why I have a home phone at this point.
If I called you at home, you wouldn't answer?
I wouldn't answer, David. It'll ring the voicemail, and it'll tell you my voicemail's full. Unless I recognize the number, you know, like it's one of my kids, I'm not going to answer. Plus, we're never home.
Yeah.
So, you know, the phone just rings and rings and rings and rings, and that's all we got. But, yeah, I think this is I am annoyed about how full my mailbox is, too. That's all I could tell you. I'm actually really annoyed by how full my mailbox is. And really, everybody telling lies about stuff. Well, just remember, I've got a couple Ossoff mailers. I've got no negative stuff from Ossoff. But I've got plenty of negative stuff about Ossoff. And then crazy stuff. I mean, just loony stuff from some of these
folks. How does he feel about immigration?
Ossoff's really good on immigration. Strong border enforcement, fixing the immigration system. I mean, he's good at immigration. I have some friends that are campaigning for him, and you know they try to say, "Oh no, he's your guy." I said, "Well, you know, he's just one little problem about him. He's a Democrat. It's one little problem." Let's take a break here on the Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio.
Si usted tiene problemas con inmigración o asuntos que tiene que arreglar, llama a los abogados de Cook Immigration Partners. Somos en su lado. Tenemos más de 50 años de experiencia haciendo las leyes de inmigración y defendiendo a los inmigrantes. Llámenos hoy a las 404-816-8611, a las 404-816-8611 o al www.immigration.net.
Whether cruising the strip at a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on americaswebradio.com.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200. Or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the welcome back to the Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio. David, it's great to be back here today. We just finished talking about the race. So I guess next Tuesday is the election, correct?
So, 18th, yeah.
And I'd rather not – I'm going to probably vote down and vote today and just make a decision and just kind of go with it. But it's
– Close your eyes and –
And hold hold my nose more than anything.
hold your nose
and just say.
And put your finger where it lands.
See.
Nobody knows.
So I guess next Tuesday night will be an interesting evening. It'll be an interesting evening. he laughs.
If you say so.
Well, you know, if Ossoff in fact pulls off a massive upset, that will have major implications around the United States. For the Democratic Party, for Trump, and all that. There's also a special election today in Kansas for Pompeo's seat, Mike Pompeo's seat. But that's Kansas. I mean, that's, you know, like 98% Republican. I have a really good friend from high school who lives in Kansas who's a Democrat. She's very excited to vote. I think she's voting in this election, and she lives in that district. But she says there's zero chance that a Democrat's going to win that election. I do want to ask you, David, about the bombing of Syria. Does it seem ironic to you that Trump is touched over the killing of these kids but doesn't want them in the United States as refugees? Isn't that a little ironic? Maybe irony is not the right word. Maybe ironic is right. Maybe it's maybe a better word would be jerky. You're a jerk. Yeah, I'm gonna throw $100 million of missiles into an air base that we've already warned that we're going to bomb, and then not even target the air base itself, blow up a couple bunkers and not even hit the runway, and then say we still don't want Syrian refugees in the United States. I mean, that hypocrisy, maybe? Hypocrite? Is that a better word? I am not one that favors allowing other countries to bomb its citizens with chemical weapons. But to act unilaterally and something like that, I am not really a conspiracy theorist, David. I'm really not. But this just reeks of something. It just reeks of something. I mean, I would think you're kind of a conspiracy guy. Doesn't this reek of something to you? Doesn't it just smell funny? To me, it just smells funny. It just smells really funny that if there is something going on within the Trump administration that we are simply oblivious to, just oblivious to. We've got ICE today coming out with a new memo talking about the detention and the issuance of notices to appear. Now, David, as part of the deportation process, deportation is the process a lot like the criminal process in that to start a criminal process, you need either an indictment or an information. So an indictment comes from a grand jury, an information comes from a prosecutor to start a criminal process. Similarly, in immigration court, to be put into deportation proceedings, the government has to issue what's called a notice to appear. That is like an information. It's like a written notice saying, hey, you're not a citizen and national of the United States. You are a citizen or national of country X. You enter the country on such and such a day with such and such a visa or undocumented, and you committed such and such a crime, or you remained undocumented, and you are deportable for the following reason. This memo from ICE is very interesting, David, and I wanted to talk about it today because of how interesting it is. It talks about the four ways that a notice to appear is issued, four reasons under which it would be done. The first appears to be the most obvious. You are convicted of a criminal charge. Okay, that's deportable. ICE finds you in the jail, and you have a criminal charge. That's obvious. Two, you have committed a crime that you're arrested on. Okay, no, you are there. Now, in both of those situations, ICE typically has information to give them probable cause, which they need probable cause to issue a notice to appear, to give them probable cause to arrest that person as being not a U.S. citizen, because somewhere in that criminal process, somewhere in there, has been a how would you say this? An admission that somebody is not a U.S. citizen. I'm from Mexico, and here's my immigration status. Or they have a previous encounter with immigration. They have been detained at the airport. They have been stopped at a border and sent back home. Then maybe they've been previously deported or in deportation. So ICE has a fingerprint of some kind, something that leads them to believe that that person is, and that gives them probable cause to issue the notice to appear and put that person in deportation proceedings. Now, so that you got a criminal conviction, criminal charge, you got maybe somebody who has a prior order of deportation that you can do this on. But interestingly enough, in this memo that they came out with recently, they said there is another ground. They are actually prohibited from issuing notices to be unless they have probable cause to believe the person is a foreign national and not lawfully in the United States. And they said this, the most common way that we know that somebody's undocumented is through their own admissions. Now, you and I have both watched, seems like 30 years of Law and Order on television, right? It's been on forever, almost my entire adult life, it seems like. Bum bum dun dun. We got how that goes. Bum bum. So, what have we learned in watching 30 years of Law and Order about talking to law enforcement officers?
Keep your mouth shut.
I mean, every episode seems to end with, "Oh yes, I did it." You know, shut up. So the right to remain silent, perhaps even greater in many circumstances than your right to counsel. Now, there is no technical – there's a right to counsel in immigration but that you pay for. So there's no right to counsel for you to have a government-paid lawyer. So what you have is people that admit they're undocumented. How does this happen? All right. I'll give you a classic example, David. Driving along the street, I get pulled over by the police. And this happened to me a couple weeks ago, by the way. I was in Utah on Sunday morning about – 5:30 a.m. going to the airport in a rental car, big old honking SUV rental car.
And what kind of alien did they think you looked like?
Well, they thought I was speeding, so which I was. And I was going about 88 and a 55, but, you know, going up a hill. Nobody on the road. I just wasn't paying attention. I was listening to the radio and just kind of thinking about the day.
Did you get a ticket anyway?
No, I did not get a ticket.
Oh.
If I'd have been Latino, I'd have gotten a ticket. I'd probably been arrested if I'd been a Latino. But just an old white guy driving in a rental car. They said, "Well, here's your warning, sir. Please be careful in the future. Have a nice day." But if I'd been Latino, what would have happened? They would have said, "Sir, I'm going to show you your driver's license." And let's say I don't have a driver's license. Let's say, "Sorry, officer, I don't have a license with me. What's your name?" Now, you are required by Supreme Court precedent to give the police your name. You're required to do that. You're required to identify yourself. You're not necessarily required to produce ID, but you are certainly required to give your name and not lie about it. So my name is, you know, Juan Lopez. Okay, Juan. So Juan, why don't you have a license? So now you have a question and answer, right? If you're smart, what do you say? You say, "I refuse to answer. I am exercising my right to remain silent. Please step out of the car, sir." Step out of the car. "What's your name?" "My name is Juan Lopez." "Where are you from?" "I exercise my right to remain silent, and I would like a lawyer." I mean, that's what you got to say those words. "I'm not going to answer any more questions until I speak to a lawyer." Now, are you going to get arrested? Sure. Would you get arrested anyway? Yes. If you're Latino driving out a license in Georgia, you're getting arrested anyway. So why would you tell the police that you're from Mexico and undocumented if you're getting arrested anyway? Okay, so they bring you to the jail, And let's presume you don't have any ID. Now, of course, if you're carrying a consular card from Mexico or a Mexican passport, that can be used against you as well because you're carrying it with you. So if you've got literally no documents with you and you go to the jail and say, what's your name? My name is Juan Lopez. What's your address? I refuse to answer until I talk to a lawyer. I'm exercising my right to remain silent. So the police put down Juan Lopez. I don't have a birth date. You're not required to give me a birth date. And they can take your fingerprints, of course. Now, if you've never been detained by immigration, so you never had an encounter at the border, at the airport, you never applied for it, but you're just a guy who's been here for 15 years with nothing, they're going to put – ICE may put a hold on you. They may not put a hold on you. I mean, technically, they shouldn't. And this memo says, look, if you don't have probable cause to believe – and that means something that either comes from the police, where they read a police report, hey, this guy, I arrested him, and he had a Mexican ID with him.
Question.
Yeah.
How did they find some documentation from Mexico unless he provided it to them?
Well, once they arrest you, they can search you.
But they can take my wallet, but can they go through my wallet?
Oh, yeah. Once you're arrested, for their safety, they can reach in your pockets, they can body search you, they can look at your documents on your possession, absolutely. Those are incident to arrest. Now, you can obviously move to suppress that stuff later, and maybe you can, maybe you can't suppress it, depending on the circumstances of the stop, because then you go to the police, why'd you stop the guy? Oh, well, he was weaving. In broad daylight? He was weaving and he had no knuckling? What do you mean weaving? So you can move to suppress that stuff. But, yeah, they can search you. So they're going to have that on it. They're perfectly permissible in the Supreme Court. You can strike it down if you think it's fruit of the poisonous tree stuff. So for safety reasons, they can search you. So should you carry identifying documents with you that show that you're not a U.S. citizen or permanent resident? Probably not. You probably shouldn't carry those with you. It's weird to say don't carry ID with you, but if you're stopped and you have the ID with you and you have no encounter before, they're going to use that to issue a notice to appear. Now, think about this. If you exercise your right to remain silent, you've never been stopped before, so you take your fingerprints and nothing comes up in any database, what do they have to do? They can't put a hold on you. According to this memo, they can't put a hold on you. You just pay your fine, you pay your bond, and you walk out the door. So if you want to reduce the chances that you're going to be put into deportation proceedings if you're undocumented, and you've never had contact. Now, if you've had contact before, look, ICE will have that information in their system. It's funny, people come to me, well, how long does that stay in their system? Forever. There's no statute of limitations? No, there's no statute of limitations ever. That'll be in the database 1,000 years from now. There'll be a database with that information in it. So if you've been detained before or you've been stopped before, well, at that point you can exercise or not exercise your right to remain silent. I'd still say you should remain silent, but they're going to issue the notice to appear. But if you've never had this encounter and ICE has nothing to use that you've said to use against you, they might be frustrated, but they have to release you. Now, David, what happens? Okay, they bring you to the jail in Gwinnett County. They you refuse to talk to the officer about anything other than your name. They book you under, suspicion of driving without a license, or driving without a license, improper lane change, or your tail light was out, or your windows were tinted too dark that from your 73 Chevy, or whatever it happens to be. And then ICE comes and talks to you, because ICE is there at these 287G facilities. He says, tell me your name. It's obvious you're not from here, because you don't speak English. You ejerzo mi derecho de quedarme callado. I'm going to remain silent. So you're not going to talk to me. And this is hard. Think about it, David. Could you do this? Could you literally sit there and say nothing?
Probably not.
It's tough, isn't it? You're asking for a very difficult thing. Now, the officer stopped me. He said, so I could have just said, officer, here's my driver's license. Here's the rental agreement, but I'm not going to talk to you about anything else. Would I have gotten a ticket? Oh, yeah. I'd have gotten a ticket for sure. So I just chatted the guy up because there was a circumstance in which I didn't fear being deported or arrested. I just feared getting a $400 ticket for driving too fast in Utah in the morning. you've got a real interesting situation where you have this right to remain silent, but it's very difficult to exercise. It's very difficult to use because of the intimidation factor. And then, of course, there is always the idea of, I'm going to go to my cell and talk to my cellmate about it, and now I've disclosed it to my cellmate, and I'm screwed anyway. Let's take a break here on the Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio.
Si usted ha casado con un ciudadano, o tiene problemas con inmigración, o tiene una oferta de trabajo, llama a los abogados de Cook Immigration Partners. Somos en su lado. Con más de 100 años de experiencia en la ley de inmigración, conocemos la ley y sabemos cómo ayudarle. Llámalos hoy a las 404-816-8611, a las 404-816-8611, o visítenos al www.immigration.net.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200. Or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
This is Lawyer Liz. Join me each week as we discuss drones, the Internet of Things, and all the technology in between. It's Buzz Off with Lawyer Liz, Wednesdays at 2.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
So David and I were just talking, switching gears a little bit from notices to appear to the Supreme Court, and where Neil
Gorsuch
is how he pronounces it, apparently. You know, it's pronounced Gorsuch is what it looks like, Gorsuch, but Gorsuch is like Cook, like my name. You know, how do you get Cook out of Cook kind of thing. Where he stood on immigration. You know, he went to Harvard. I mean, do you have to go to Harvard to be in the Supreme Court?
Pardon me?
Do you have to go to Harvard or Yale to be in the Supreme Court?
One would think so, wouldn't one?
And I think Sandra Day was...
Well, I don't think
so. Sandra Day went to Stanford.
Thomas didn't.
Thomas, didn't he go to Harvard?
Clarence?
Yeah.
He drove past. Does that count?
Oh, no. Where did he go to law school?
I don't know.
I think he was a Harvard guy.
Is he?
I know he speaks at UGA. I don't think he went to UGA. I mean, he's from Georgia. You know, he's from Georgia.
Yeah.
But he speaks at UGA all the time, but I don't think he went to... I thought he went to Harvard. Here is kind of an analysis of Gorsuch's record, that he is neither a staunch defender nor a harsh critic of immigrants' rights. He's only dealt with a handful of immigration cases, and in those, he's ruled in favor of the immigrants less than half the time. Okay. Here's one written by Gorsuch called Montano, which is probably Montano, Vega versus Holder, where Gorsuch expressed sympathy with an undocumented immigrant forced to choose between two unappealing options. One, pursuing an appeal of his deportation order, knowing that if he lost, he would be banned from entering the U.S. for at least 10 years, or two, giving up his right to appeal, but leaving open the possibility he could re-enter the United States after being deported. At the same time, Gorsuch actually initiated disciplinary proceedings against an attorney who he stated had repeatedly done a poor job of representing immigrants. In another case called Porro versus Barnes, he overturned a lower court ruling in favor of an immigrant who had been restrained and shot with tasers three times by his jailers. Even though Gorsuch agreed that the jail had ignored a federal policy which prohibited the use of detainers, he found that this action did not violate the person's constitutional rights. I don't think that's really an immigration decision. That's more of a civil rights decision. I don't think he's a big fan of the civil rights laws, so I mean that. Here's why I do like Gorsuch, is that he doesn't like Chevron. Now, David, when I say Chevron, what do you think of right away? You think of the gas station, right? Well, it is kind of the gas station. It's a court case, Supreme Court, which basically says that courts are to play only a limited role in reviewing an agency's interpretation of the law within its area of expertise. So if immigration issues a regulation and they interpret a law, the court will go, well, you know what? They're the experts, right? Whatever. Good for us. That's Chevron. And Scalia, that was a big Scalia thing. Scalia was hugely in favor of that. Gorsuch has openly criticized that case. And Chevron's like a 5-4 case. So there is a decent... Now, there are a lot of people that hate Chevron, a lot of immigration lawyers. We think, if you're honest, why are we giving deference to an agency which is not an expert? And even though they're the immigration agency, they are not experts in immigration law. They are government bureaucrats who come and go at whim. They are not fully cognizant of how the laws interact and work, and they certainly not do any damn deference, from my opinion. But then you have people on the other side, like the environmentalists. You know, when they've got somebody like Obama in office, yeah, we want to defer. But they want Trump in office, no, we don't want to defer. So there are people that both like and hate Chevron. I would love to see Chevron go down. And for that reason, maybe that alone, I thought that Gorsuch was a pretty good pick. I also don't think that, you know, let's say the Democrats made this the thing. We're gonna vote against Gorsuch in mass. I think he won what, 51-49 or 52-48 or something like that. I think that's maybe the lowest number of any justice on the court in ever. I don't know. It must have been pretty close. And I think they blew their wad a little early. I think they shot their gun a little too early. Their musket was misfired. Because you've got McConnell, who is honestly, David, just as bad as Reed. The right is just, you know, all over Reed. Reed did terrible things. McConnell is no better. Now that the nuclear option has been exercised, and that any judge can be put on the court with 51 votes, I think it's turned the Senate into the House. Now, the filibuster still lives for other issues, legislation generally. But I have to tell you, David, I think the Senate is dead compared to what it used to be. I think it's dead compared to what it used to be. Now, I will tell you, in Gorsuch, as he talks about Chevron, this came out of a case called Gutierrez-Brizuela versus Lynch, which involved an undocumented immigrant who sought legal permanent status. A prior Tenth Circuit case had interpreted immigration law to say that Mr. Gutierrez was eligible to apply for permanent resident status. However, the Board of Immigration Appeals effectively overruled the Tenth Circuit's interpretation of immigration law, claiming the courts must defer to the agency's interpretation. Gorsuch wrote that the BIA had, quote, pulled out from petitioners like Mr. Gutierrez-Brizuela a rug that the agency itself set under them. Gorsuch then went on to criticize the principles of administrative law that the agency relied on, writing that, quote, when the political branches disagree with the judicial interpretation of existing law, the Constitution prescribes the appropriate remedial process. It's called legislation. So he's not a lot of stuff about Gorsuch on the immigration front, but I don't think he's going to be bad. You know, Scalia wasn't bad on immigration. There are a number of opinions that Scalia issued that were actually quite good for immigrants and immigration. I think this post is more about a lot of other issues than immigration, which is why it didn't really excite me a whole thing. It's not like this is an abortion issue or this is issues involving civil rights, the Voting Rights Act. Those, I think, are far more important in the context of this justice than anything else. So, David, I just yawned. I'm sorry. I'm so tired.
Are you boring yourself?
Maybe I'm boring everybody listening to me today. I'm still recovering from my trip to Peru on that. I will tell you that the right was very upset about Gorsuch. In fact, from the right-wing rag, The Washington Times, which is not even really a newspaper, more of a website at this point, wrote this as their headline. Gorsuch's pro-illegal immigrant rulings, royal confirmation debate. So this is what they wrote. I think this is hilarious. This goes back to that same Gutierrez-Brizuela case I was just quoting. Gorsuch repeatedly defended an undocumented immigrant against the massive crush of the administrative state during his confirmation hearing, picking a fascinating fight with a potential future colleagues on the Supreme Court. The case he was referring to, 26 ruling, in which he wrote both the opinion of the court and strictly a separate concurring opinion, has become a major flashpoint on his seat. This actually is, he wrote this, quote, "When, with all respect, a bureaucracy can overrule dispassionate judges on the meaning of a law based on their political whims at the moment, that's a separation of powers issue, I think, and maybe an equal protection issue, too." Wow. That, you know, I got to tell you, that may be the judge I want on the Supreme Court on immigration issues. Maybe that's the judge I want on the Supreme Court with immigration. I think that we could have done far worse as far as the Supreme Court is concerned on this. Far worse with Trump on this issues. We've got a fight brewing going forward. There's going to be there may be one or two more oral arguments this session on immigration issues. There's already been three or four immigration cases argued to the court, which Gorsuch will not decide on. He will not not be part of that process. But he will get to hear these new cases. I kind of feel bad for him in a way. Hey, Judge, read these 47 briefs. We have oral argument tomorrow. Have a nice day. Because once you get sworn in, you're in. I mean, you it's not like you get, hey, I want to ease in. Could you give me a little training this week? No, you're literally right in. So I don't think it's such a bad thing. I'm kind of excited about Gorsuch. I think there's just not going to be that bad of stuff. Now, on immigration, there might be other issues that you just don't agree with on him, and you know I respect that, and I certainly understand where you're coming from. But from an immigration perspective, I don't think we have a lot to fear from Neil Gorsuch that would be any different than we would hear from a Scalia. But in fact, I think we may get more given his whole abhorrence of the deference to Chevron, to the government agencies. I think that's a wonderful thing. Now, David, I got to tell you, we have – next thing I want to talk about today – is 14 new immigration judges were sworn in last Friday. And of the 14 new immigration judges, 10 of them have previously worked as government lawyers, as prosecutors. How do you think this is going to work out for the aliens appearing in their court? Now, I'm not saying that you can't be a fair judge if you have spent a career in the immigration service prosecuting people in deportation proceedings. I'm not saying you can't be fair. What I am saying, however, is that there appears to be a strong imbalance in the force in regards to this. Now, I'm very familiar with the process of becoming a judge. I have friends that have gone through the process, both in the government and without the government. And it's much easier for a government lawyer to become an immigration judge because their security and background checks have already been done, so it's a much faster process. And these people have all been in the process for probably a year, is my guess. And I understand there are plenty of non-government lawyers applying, it's just that the background check takes longer. But I would imagine that since these judges are appointed by the Attorney General, that we're going to continuously see many of these judges, continue to serve. And I'll give you an example. Justin Adams, he's going to be the San Antonio Immigration Court. He has been working for the government for the last 6 years as ICE counsel. Ed Barkas, however, who's going to be the Imperial California Immigration Court, has actually apparently not been involved in immigration at all and has been a family court judge in Oklahoma since 2012. So I'm curious as to how those things work. Let's be back on the Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio.
Before we leave, he went to Yale.
He didn't go to Yale, he went to UT.
Soy Charles Cook, el jefe del grupo de abogados Cook Immigration Partners. Estoy en su lado, con más de 20 años de experiencia con la ley de inmigración. Conozco cómo ayudarle. Sé la ley y sé que alguna gente podemos ayudar. Llámanos hoy a las 404-816-8611, a las 404-816-8611, o visítenos en el internet, www.immigration.net.
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Ronaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on americaswebradio.com.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200. Or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio. We were just talking, David, about these immigration judges that are sworn in. 10 of them have backgrounds with ICE in the process. And, you know, it's really sad. I have a lot of colleagues, I think, that would like to be judges. But honestly, they just don't pay very well. Entry level, I mean, it sounds terrible. Entry level is like $125,000. But if you're a lawyer who's got 5 years, five years experience as a lawyer, you need. If you're a good lawyer, you're probably making that, unless you're with the government, and then you're not making that. And so that's why you get a lot of government lawyers apply for the job. Plus, you've been a government lawyer for 10 years or 15 years, and you get tired of it. I've been a judge. In 5 years as a judge, you invest in your pension. I mean, you're golden. You can quit and go to private practice, and you're sucking a pension off the government the rest of your life. So there's a real incentive for people to stay within the government and to do this kind of job. I just, you know, honestly, I don't think I could ever be this job. It is just a grind. You hear the same types of cases all the time. Two, many of them are just emotionally heartbreaking kind of situations. I mean, that's what you get a lot of these cases. And three, the level of competence of the lawyers in front of you varies from excellent to you should be disbarred. And you just don't know what to expect day to day. And you witness the injustice of people being represented by incompetent counsel. And you think, first, I mean, I talk to immigration judges all the time about this. They think about, you know, do they have is it their place to tell the individual, you know, your lawyer is really doing you a disservice here today? I mean, Gorsuch, I mean, he took the stand. No, I'm going to file bar complaints against this guy, try to stop it from happening. I mean, judges do that, but I think they could be more aggressive with it. And you pick the wrong lawyer, you could lose your case. And a winnable case goes from winnable to loser by a lawyer who's lazy or not doing their job or not paying, or just who doesn't know. One of the scary things with this rise in Trump and people getting put into deportation with them more frequently, we're seeing more new lawyers jump into the fray. And David, when you see new lawyers jump into the fray, you see lots of malpractice happening, lots of, and sitting in court. As you're waiting for your case to be called, and you're watching it, and you're just shaking your head going, oh, my goodness, what is going on here? And it's sad. It's sad, sad, sad to watch that happening. I am hoping that we can do a better job of training these folks. Now, David, I will tell you, I testified last week. It's why I wasn't here, actually. I was testifying last week in a trial. In Birmingham, Alabama, I was called as an expert witness in Alabama on a trial against a former immigration lawyer. I was called by the prosecution, and it was a very interesting thing. I have been an expert witness in a number of trials, but never in a criminal trial against a former immigration lawyer. Douglas Cooner was indicted on 14 charges by the county in Birmingham that he's in, and these charges were three counts of second degree theft by deception, two counts of first degree perjury, three counts of third degree perjury, four counts of unauthorized practice of law, and two counts of first degree theft by deception. Okay, He'd been released on bond, and this trial's been preparing for months. Now, I will tell you, why is Cooner, first of all, why was he disbarred? He was disbarred because he was lying to clients. He was taking their money, either not doing their work or doing things they didn't authorize, like put them in deportation proceedings by filing for asylum for them to get a work permit, and not telling them, hey, you're going to be put into deportation proceedings and you have no case and you're going to be ordered deported. And he did this for years. Finally, an immigration judge reported him to the authorities in Alabama. And Georgia does crap on this, but in Alabama, they actually went after this guy and disbarred him. Then Cooner kept coming back to court saying he was admitted to the Puerto Rican bar. Now, the Puerto Rican bar, some state bars like Georgia and Alabama are what they call mandatory bars. So if you want to practice law, you have to be part of the bar. Other states don't have mandatory bars, like Puerto Rico or Kansas. They say you can bond the bar, not bond the bar, but you're licensed by the Supreme Court. So they can. It's like a voluntary bar association. Anybody can join it who's passed the bar at some point. So apparently he got into that bar, probably didn't tell him he'd been disbarred in Alabama, and he was signing that I'm a lawyer, but he wasn't telling his clients in Alabama that he'd been disbarred by the bar of Alabama. They thought he was still a lawyer, and he wasn't a lawyer. It was just what he did to these people was just horrific. And he had hundreds of clients. It was horrific. The deputy district attorney on this is a guy named Patrick Lamb, who did a really – he must have done a great job because he won this case. He was convicted. But in his opening statement, he said, quote, "The worst times in our lives, we go to lawyers. The public should be allowed to rely on lawyers." That's a great opening statement for a guy who was pretending to be a lawyer. Now, this is his picture, by the way, when he was booked. He had gone to trial. When I showed up for my testimony, had this kind of scraggly beard, kind of like a homeless guy beard it looked like. And Mr. Cooner had been in the military and apparently had a Purple Heart. And he'd pinned his Purple Heart to his suit jacket. What do you think about that, David? Yeah. Yeah. I thought so, too. Apparently he's was a colonel or a major or a captain or something in the military. But I thought that was dishonorable to do that. I thought that was inappropriate. So I was able to testify last Tuesday about this. Cooner himself was first disciplined by the Alabama bar in 2010 and ordered not to practice law in the state. That decision was appealed to the Supreme Court of Alabama, went back multiple times to the Supreme Court. He was officially disbarred in September 2013. He was also disbarred by the immigration courts, which has a separate process, in 2014. And so all the victims that were before this court had hired Cooner from that point forward. So after he disbarred, he had thousands of victims before that. Cooner's relied on the fact he'd been in the military decades before. Say he was just, and he'd always bring this up. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. The government, his lawyer, so it was a guy named William Dawson, who's kind of a good old boy, talk like this, kind of an older gentleman, and he just had his easy way about him. He's going to be like Matlock, you know, and he's, well, let me just tell you about that kind of thing. And so he said this, "There's a lot more to this than Mr. Lamb's version," he said. Cooner is married to a Colombian woman, believed that immigration work was important, and had a passion to work for those who are trying to achieve legal status. Cooner was under the impression he could practice law in immigration court and did not have any criminal intent. That doesn't make you a thief. Well, actually, it does. He said he served in the military for 26 years and he suffered from PTSD. He said Cooner was mistaken about his licensing. Just a mistake that I took hundreds of thousands of dollars of people and destroyed their lives. He may have even killed some of his clients, but it's just a mistake. So,
Jay, they lost, Alabama lost the governor and an attorney, huh?
They did. That's why there's an article about the result of the trial. But he was convicted on 9 counts yesterday by the jury. I was able to testify, here's what it says. A U visa, an expert witness, Professor Charles Cook, testified is for illegal immigrants who are victims of crime. And I went on to testify about all kinds of things. He said his current, he paid his, I don't know how much he paid the landlord. He paid his current lawyer $7,000 for the U visa, which I can't understand why he would pay that much for a U visa. Cook said immigration judges can, so Swerdlin is the government lawyer talking about this. Says Perez could have revised and submitted new asylum documents once he learned he submitted the ones were false, but did not do so. However, Cook said immigration judges can still view the original documents even when he was submitted. I can guarantee you'll lose your asylum case if false documents are originally submitted because you're not credible. Someone who helps a person file immigration papers does not have to be a lawyer, Cook said. But non-lawyers are not allowed to receive money from the people who they are helping. A lawyer who is not in good standing is not allowed to file paperwork for people who are on behalf of any client. It was actually, I testified for about an hour, had some cross-examination fun with Mr. Swerdlin. So you're a professor? Yes, I'm an adjunct professor at Emory Law School. So how long have you been practicing law? You got like a JD or something? She could have put an ass, right? Well, yes, in fact, I have a Juris Doctorate degree. So I got an LLB, but, you know, they changed that to JDs a long time ago. And, you know, and he was kind of mumbling to himself. And, yeah, okay. And then he asked me a couple, well, you can go ahead and change that asylum application in front of the judge. Said, you certainly can. But you're still going to be held accountable for the lie you told previously. And clearly filing applications on asylum that are fraudulent is kind of against the law. And we got in a little tussle, him and I. It was a little verbal tussle. A government lawyer, the prosecutor, then asked me some follow-up questions. And the judge was great. I really enjoyed the judge. He was very kind, and he was very solicitous, and clearly listened to when I was talking. I was talking to the jury, but I looked at the judge when I talked as well, kind of went back and forth. And he's kind of scolded the defense lawyer at one point about the way he was talking to me. And at the end, the judge asked, so, counsel, do you have any further need for Mr. Cook? He asked the prosecutor, no, Mr. Cook can be dismissed. I don't have any need for him. Well, you know, counsel for Mr. Cooner, do you have any further need for Mr. Cook? I didn't want him here in the first place. So, it was a very interesting experience to testify in the prosecution's behalf. One of my friends on Facebook said, I can't believe you testified for the prosecution. I said, you don't know the damage this guy did. The damage this guy did is mind-boggling. One of my former associates reminded me of the terrible things that Mr. Cooner did, and he's just mean. He's just mean to people. It's kind of, you know, people said he was kind of an anal pour to them on many occasions. So no, I don't feel bad about testifying for the prosecution in this case. It was certainly the right thing to do, and I do thank Judge Cassidy for really having the gumptions to push this action and to help the prosecution, because what Cooner was doing was damaging too many people. Now, if we can get the other people doing the same thing out, we'll be in better shape. That's it for today on the Immigration Hour on America's Web Radio. We'll be back next week. We're going to talk more about the happenings on Trump and immigration.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200. Or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.